tonight's speakers, which is John.
Thank you very much. My name is John. I'm an addict.
Hey, John.
Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
Fantastic. There was none of this in my around microphones and PAs and stuff like that. But thanks for the chair. Thanks for that. And you know, Henriette was talking about being kind of worried and kind of a bit nervous coming down to do a chair today. There's a lot of people here, you know what I mean? And I always think the reason why I'm nervous or apprehensive about doing this is because, long story short, I've got a lot of passion for recovery and I don't want to make a mess of this, you know what I mean? If I didn't care, I wouldn't care, you know what I mean? If I didn't care about recovery, I'd come here, I'd speak for 40 minutes, I'd go and have a bit of dinner with my mates and come home and I wouldn't care. But I deeply, deeply care. I was talking to Emma the other night and he was talking about things they say in recovery in the States and these little catchphrases and stuff like that. And people go up to share and they say, my name's John, and I-O-N-A big time. And I-O-N-A big time. You know what I mean? Everything I've got in my life today is due to N-A, you know what I mean? Because I was a guy going nowhere. You know what I mean, before I came to NA, and what I was promised in here was I'd be clean, you know, if I'd done the right things, and I was promised I would get on-the-job training in life, and that's what I've got, you know, and I'm clean 20 years, you know what I mean, Emma and Paul come back from the convention, and they got me a clean for decades deal, which we don't have over here, so you know, maybe we will soon, but now I've got in my pocket a clean for decades keyring. You know what I mean? And I, you know, I'm clean for decades and I keep coming back to meetings. And I keep coming back to meetings because my illness keeps coming back. You know what I mean? If I could get a certificate or a keyring that says I am a done, dusted, done deal, I'd love that, you know, to be able to frame that and put that above my bed and show the people and all that. But I am not by any shape or form a done deal. And, my illness has got like a policy statement. My job is to think up new and cunning ways to mess with your head. Yeah. And my illness is very, very snide about me. Snide. Yeah. And it's snide. But snide, the word, kind of, you kind of need inside information to be snide about anyone. I can't be snide about a stranger. I need to know something about them. And my illness knows a great deal about me. So it's always thinking up new ways and means to kind of get in my head and kind of like, and like Henrietta says, my illness is essentially a disease, an outlook of negativity. Negativity. That's the bad news. And the good news is there's a lot of people in this room think the same as me. I kind of like, so they're on my side. That's the antidote, if you like, you know what I mean? So, and what I've got in these rooms in the last 20 years is not sympathy. I'm an addict. If you give me sympathy, I will use it. I will use it against you. I think, oh, that's handy. My illness is like, you know that Bear Grylls? They drop him out of a helicopter naked with a spoon. 10 foot of snow. Yeah, and they go for a break and they come back. Bear Grylls has built himself a little house. He's roasting a reindeer. He's skinned a reindeer. He's got himself some kind of Parker thing. And he's kind of, that's my illness. And he uses what he can get. You know what I mean? So, that's why I keep coming back to me, because my illness is kind of alive, you know what I mean? My illness is alive and well, you know what I mean? And but if you give me sympathy, I'll use it against you. What I've got here is, and the currency of these meetings, I think, is empathy. And they sound very much the same, but they're kind of a little bit different. You know, empathy is that identification. Now, empathy is me coming in there and saying, look, I'm struggling, or I'm frustrated, or I'm disappointed, or I've cracked it today, or I'm starting a college course, or I'm doing something I've never done before. I'm very, very scared, but I'm doing it. And that's what we get in these meetings. You know, I mean, we get that sense of sort of like, yeah, one day at a time, we're kind of growing together, we're growing up together, we're struggling, you know what I mean, we're doing this stuff. And I kind of think, you know what I mean, it's like, I was thinking today, it's like, I tend to forget how freaked out I was when I went to my first meeting. You know what I mean? And how I've now normalised this. It's very normal coming in here. And if I go to an hour meeting or an hour and a half meeting, I kind of know what's going to happen. Someone's going to come, we can do some readings. The readings become very familiar. Someone will give their experience of the readings. They won't give advice, they won't lecture, they won't preach. They will kind of give that, you know, there'll be a degree of empathy in that room. No one will interrupt anyone. And that's very strange where I come from. Do you know what I mean? That someone would talk for 3 minutes and no one would say, why don't you just... Do you know what I mean? If I can get through this for 40 minutes without swearing, anyway, it's very strange, you know what I mean? And I went to the meeting and when I went to the first meeting, I was completely freaked out. I was completely overrun by this. I completely thought, this is bonkers. This is something like, if you'd brought me into some sort of like occult kind of black mass or something, I could not have been more freaked out. Because there was people, you know, talking about stuff, their emotions, what was going on with them, and their hopes and their fears, blatantly, in a room full of people. And no one was interrupting, no one was laughing, no one was saying seriously. People were nodding along. I thought that's a bit strange. And I thought, my God, you know what I mean? And like, what I got my first meeting was someone was talking about I'm powerless over my illness. And the guy doing the chair, I'd met him a few years previously, and he's one of the chaps, and it was very strange that here we are about 5 years later, he was in there, he was doing the chair. He was talking about God, and he was talking about his emotions, and he was talking about his struggle with life, and he was talking about all this stuff that I would not have admitted to myself. And here he was in a big room full of people talking about all this stuff, and it just freaked me out. And what I was thinking about today is how we normalise this stuff, and then we kind of embrace this stuff. And that's our step two, is that this works for us. And what happened in my life was... without getting too much into it, you know what I mean? It all started with my great-great-grandfather, my problem started. he's in this little Irish croft overlooking the land, and there wasn't enough to eat. But anyway, my mum and dad come to this country in the kind of mid-50s, you know what I mean? They came here, you know what I mean, to get jobs. They didn't come here to be rock stars, they didn't come here to be kind of actresses, actresses. They came here out of economic necessity. My mum was always freaked out by London. She never settled in London. My father was kind of, he didn't start drinking until he was 23, and then he made up for lost time. He was a brawler, he was a fighter, he was a raconteur, he was a pub legend. But at home, there wasn't even a tin of beans. Do you know what I mean? And that's all like, that's the story, you know what I mean? He used to beat the shit out of my mum. And my mum used to beat the hell out of him. And I, as soon as I was kind of conscious in this world, I thought to myself, I want to go back where I come from. This is very, very scary. I don't like this at all. I grew up very scared. I think I was born an addict. My illness, I wouldn't say I am an addict because of my illness, but my upbringing gave my illness a great deal of stuff to work with. And what Paul said here a couple of weeks ago, you know what I mean, about talking about that in my house there was atmosphere, fear. You know what I mean? It was like, there was a sense of fear in my house, you know what I mean? And then they sent me to school, and very cruel thing, sent me to school. And I'm scared to go home, so now I'm scared to go to school. So what I used to just like doing was like playing on the railway tracks and playing, you know, like in, you know, we're climbing up gasometers and climbing. If there was a fence and had, if there was a fence, I think, okay, it's a fence. If it was a fence and had barbed wire on the top, I'd have to climb over it. I had to climb over it, and that was kind of what I did, you know what I mean? And then kind of, I got to about kind of whatever, I started smoking fags, you know what I mean? I'd give them do whatever, and then when I got to about 10, I had some sort of cider or something. We used to put ash in cider. It's like Henrietta said, it was the solution. Because I, you know what I mean, I, you know, just drink this and I fall over, and my mates would fall over. And some of them would say, I won't do that again, I won't do that for another little while. I wanted to do it the very next day. You know what I mean? And that's, and like Henrietta said, it was the solution, because I think I need a recovery before I even started using. I was very freaked out by the world. I just needed a bit of understanding. I needed a bit of guidance. I needed a lot of stuff that I have got in here since, you know what I mean? I needed all sorts of stuff. I needed a good meal, and I needed a bit of stability at home, and I wasn't going to get it. My dad was off, you know what I mean? My mum used to have nervous breakdowns, and we'd either go to kind of Catholic orphanages in the early to mid-60s, and they are as terrifying as it would suggest, you know what I mean? There was nuns in there who were like terrifying, you know what I mean? And they'd bash people up and stuff like that. So now I'm kind of, I'm terrified there, I'm terrified in school, I'm terrified at home, and I'm just scared all the time, and I get very good at being scared, you know what I mean? And so anyway, I go to secondary school, I get through secondary school. I develop a cocky exterior. That's what I do, you know what I mean? You think, oh, that kid, he's got loads of confidence. But behind that confidence is just someone who is just really scared of being caught out, really scared of saying the wrong thing, really scared of wearing the wrong thing, really scared of, scared. But kind of like presenting, getting very good at presenting that I'm kind of okay. Then I left school, and I got jobbing at a place called Take Six Clothing Shop, and I was in the West End, I was in Soho, I was about 16, it was 1975. Big flares, big lapels, doing all my money every week, you know what I mean? Asking for a sub on Monday morning. Manager's their office said, can I have a sub? He says, look, I paid you Friday, what have you done with the money? I said, well, whatever, I mean, but £24.50, I can't do it, I'm just going to spend it, I'm just be out all weekend, speeding and all that, and all of a sudden, crash, punk, the world is going to end. If this chair is soundtrack, we'll probably have a bit of a pretty vacant coming. But anyway, we can't. Anyway, it all went, and the world went. You know, that was it. You know, civilization is over. You know what I mean? Forget it. You know what I mean? And some people took it very seriously. Me, other people thought it was just a giggle. You know, still went to school, still had jobs, still done this. You know what I mean? And anyway, he was kind of, you know, I got a job as a road sweeper, which was in the 70s, there's certain jobs you could not get a sack for. You couldn't get a sack. You didn't even have to go. They couldn't sack you because you weren't there. They had to come find you to sack you. And I was given this kind of round. I'd be at home and I'd be doing all bits and pieces. And anyway, kind of, they called me out one day, picking up my wages, and the guy put me in this little van, and we drove up to this place at the back of Golders Green. And honestly, it was about knee high in leaves. He says, you haven't swept this up. And I said, I have. And the cars were skidding there, and it was on the leaves, on the wet leaves. And I was, you know, I kind of half believed. That was the mad thing. That was the maddest thing. I can't half believe. Anyway, eventually this happened. And I went to work on the railway. I went to work on the railway. And what I liked about going on the railway was about 18, 19, and we'd end up in these places like earlier houses. You go in the meat market, and you go in the meat market, you're speeding all night, smoking draw, working at the tunnel, screaming and shouting. Nice and mad. Proper mad. And you come out of there, and you go in the meat market, and they got a pub in the meat market, which starts serving about 6 o'clock in the morning. So 6 o'clock in the morning, we're in there, you know, everyone's spaced out. And, you know, this guy's kind of covered in blood and they're selling kind of pig's heads and stuff like that. And like, it's surreal. You didn't need acid in there, I'll tell you. And it was kind of quite good, you know what I mean? It was quite fun for a little while. And just by the by, there used to be a pub up the road. And there was always fights in there. It was where the police used to go after. And they used to sit there and drink and talk about the job. Talk about the job, you know what I mean? And then have a fight. It always used to fall out with one another, you know what I mean? So anyway, that's... Whatever, anyway, so we're talking about a bit of progression now, and it's starting to get in the way of things, you know, starting to get, you know, relationships breaking up, you know what I mean? I'm playing in bands, you know what I mean? I'm smoking too much draw, I'm going to clubs. It was quite mad, because I'd be working on the railway and on the underground, literally underground, then kind of like... I'd be in all these mad clubs, you know, like the WAG and wherever and stuff like that. My best friend from school had the WAG. So I'd be down in the underground, you know, kind of drinking a few cans and stuff like that. And I think, hang about, it's 1 o'clock. I'd slip off, I'd go up the WAG. Then I'd go back down in the underground, working, knock a few kind of rails around and all that, and go home. Mad existence. But anyway, my thing is, right, I'm an addict, I'm an alcohol addict, there's no getting out of that. There's a lot of people who suggest, you know what I mean, that to a lot of people out there, I'm an alcoholic, but to me, I'm an addict. In this fellowship, I'm an addict. Alcohol is a drug. Alcohol gets a lot of people dead. Gets a lot of addicts dead, because in that reading, it says alcohol is a drug, you know what I mean, and we hear it when we want to hear it, you know what I mean, sadly. My experience is a lot of people come into fellowship and they do a step one. And they have a reservation about alcohol. And the deal they cut, I have no power of negotiation over my illness, but they start thinking, well, I'll cut the deal, or they start thinking, as a make weight in this deal, as a sign of good faith in this deal, I'll put alcohol in. If I bought a house from you and it says, as a sign of good faith, I'll leave you my curtains, that's a sign of good faith. That will get no one killed, right? Leaving the curtains, right? But us not getting into them reservations about alcohol can get people killed. This isn't a mess about people live and die in recovery, you know what I mean? I know loads of people have died in recovery. You know, since I'm 20 years clean, I've known a lot of people, guys like Paul know a lot of people, Gary know a lot of people have died, you know, from this illness because we haven't addressed this thing about alcohol. I used to tumble around, you know, thinking I was having a scream, right? But what I was trying to do was just get away from my feelings that I couldn't deal with. I had no vocabulary or guidance to deal with. So it's like me suddenly saying, well, okay, me trying to deal with my emotions and my backlog of emotions, I could have more, there was as much chance of me putting a rocket, sending a rocket to the moon than me dealing with my emotions because I had no idea how to do it. It's all very well me saying I could never deal with my emotions. I didn't have a clue how to deal with my emotions. No one has shown me how to deal with my emotions. I was just pure ignorant about my emotions. I didn't know what was going on half the time. I just wanted to get away from what I was feeling. You know, I mean, it wasn't I was just being neglectful. Oh, I won't deal with my emotions today. I just no idea. So anyway, we're down a tunnel anyway, before I went into that. A bit profound then. Anyway, but anyway, we're back on track. Anyway. So what started happening, you know what I mean? I was using a lot of alcohol, losing a lot of drugs and kind of them. I was running a shop in Camden for a while. My mate who had the club had the WAG, we started the shop together. I was hanging out in Camden and I said, then it came Coke up on the scene and I thought, oh, this is the one. It's like Henrietta says, you know, why didn't I discover this before? Where has this been all my life? This is fantastic. Now I feel like, because what it was, right, is if I weren't using it, I'd say, I don't care. I don't care what you think about me. I don't care about this. No, I didn't care, but I didn't really mean it. It wasn't authentic. When I got the combination, right, of alcohol and coke, when I said, I don't care what you think, I meant it. It kind of suddenly dropped into place. I thought, no, I really, really do not care. I don't care. And I meant it. You know what I mean? 100%, I do not care what you think about me. And it was good for a while. And then what happens is, when I first started using it, it was a giggle. And then it was a giggle with some consequences. And then it was consequences, just pure consequences. I was terrified. I was waking up terrified again. I didn't know. I was waking up sometimes. I didn't know whether it was 5 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock at night. I didn't know. stuff has started to creep up on me. Right, now what I was trying to do then, right, people come up to me, right, friends of mine, with the best will in the world, and they come up to me, they put their arms around me and they say, an arm around me, and say, look, John, you've got to treat this stuff with some respect. You know what I mean? You just want to cane you just want to kind of sort of get oblivious, you start screaming and shouting, you know what I mean? You get dangerous with it, you know what I mean? You insult the wrong people, you talk badly to the wrong people. It started getting a little bit scary. I had this shop in Camden, and it was about the time kind of rave was starting, about 88, 89. And people would come in the shop and they'd give me flyers. And they'd say, you know, come to the club tonight, John, you'll be looked after, you know, doing these warehouse party stuff and all around Camden. And we'd leave them on the top, and the idea was I'd give them to people saying, this is where it's happening tonight, it's going to be really, really cool. And I really didn't fancy it. By that time, I just fancy kind of leaving the shop, and I'd walk home, which would be about half a mile, and I'd get a bottle of vodka on the way home, and I'd sit, drink a bottle of vodka, and stare at the wall. And that's what I do, and that's all I wanted to do. And I went to work one Sunday, and there was this woman who worked for me, a woman called Angie, and I said, see, what was that club like last night? And she looked at me really strange. She said, she was in the club, what are you going on about? Is this some kind of joke? And all of them kind of gone down there in blackout. And I thought to myself, what was I falling about? Was I being? She said, no, he's really coherent, he's really polite, he's really charming. What's this all about, John? Because it's all a bit weird. Is this some kind of joke? You know what I mean? Now, I'd seen my mum having all these nervous breakdowns when I was a kid, so I thought I was like, the family illness was kind of like, you know, I just thought I was mad. I thought I was going mad, you know what I mean? And it started to freak me out. My using started to freak me out. It started to take me places, to some dark places. It started to kind of get me, you know, like I thought, this isn't such a good one anymore, you know? And it was creeping up on me, creeping up on me, creeping up on me. Until, like, you know, like I was doing this thing, and I was binging, I was stop-starting. And when I used, I went kind of mad. It was like a tantrum when I used. And when I didn't use, it was just like kind of some kind of mad, you know, I'm wanting to fight bouncers, wanting to scream and shout, and I kind of like fight and characterise. And then, when I didn't use, it's a very good question to ask an addict, to say, okay, what happens when you do use? You know, mayhem, darkness. What happens when you don't use? And it's that unmanageability, it's the mad head that you don't have any kind of anaesthetic with. And all that kind of negativity, all that kind of darkness starts kind of sort of playing tricks on your head. So what was starting to happen, you know what I mean? I was in trouble if I used, and I was in trouble if I didn't use. I went to New York and had this kind of mad kind of like couple of weeks in New York, and I come back and it was really quite chaotic. But what had crept up on me, in New York at that time, a lot of people kind of like, if you got kind of went to bars and you got drunk, they didn't like it. And I was just staggering around the place and starting fights and doing my usual thing. And the guys I was with kind of saying, listen, John, you've got to sort this out. And I flew back, and I was living in this basement flat in Chalk Farm. And at the time, in the Evening Standard, they used to have this Gary Larson fast light cartoons. And I don't know if anyone remembers them, but there used to be this cartoon. This cartoon came out one day, and it was the devil at the gates of Hades. And the devil's, and it's like an airport check-in. And there's a queue. And the devil is saying to the guy at the front of the queue, he's saying, Inferno or non-inferno. He says, well, actually, it's all inferno. I just get a kick out of saying, like, smoking or non-smoking. But what I interpret that as my madness was, if you use, it's mad, and if you don't use, it's mad. So it's mad. It's just whichever way you slice it, whichever way you go, it's mad. And it, you know, I tore it out, I stuck it on the, kind of stuck it wherever, up on the wall, you know what I mean? And then, you know, there was no solution at that time. There was no way of dealing with this stuff. Anyway, a guy comes to my house one night, and I know this guy since I was about 11, and he knocked on the door and he was screaming through the letterbox, we're addicts, we're addicts. And was in the basement flat thinking, oh, I'm completely being rumped here. I've been swindled here because I don't live in the top floor of a tower block, because I wanted to sling myself out of the window. Very dark, head in hands, you know what I mean, thinking myself, you know, like. Anyway, the guy says, we're addicts and we're going to go to this Narcotics Anonymous meeting tonight. I've never heard anyone in London, in England, call drugs narcotics. It's a bit Starsky and Hutch. I said, what are you? What are you on? And he says, it's like, you know, we all kind of cut together on upcoming couple of meetings. It's kind of really quite bizarre when people talk about this, and they talk about what's going on. There's mad stories and mad people and all that. And I thought, okay, you know, I mean, I've been to some mad places, so I might have gone. can't be any less mad than some of the places I didn't know. Anyway, it's been to this meeting. Anyway, I'm being quite facetious, but I hadn't eaten for about 4 days. If you don't eat for 4 days, you go to a very wiggy place in your head. You know what I mean? If you've kind of been drinking vodka and not eating and kind of like just kind of, I'm pushing the red off the board and kind of thinking, what am I, just a nutcase? Why can't I handle this? I've got mates of mine who cane drugs, sell drugs, you know, can stop, start. You know what I mean? Like, why can't, you know? And then this guy kind of walked in, and we went off to this meeting, and I was kind of primed. I was ready to hear this gear. And we went, we couldn't find this meeting, and we was kind of hunting around, and we got in, we ended up halfway through the chair. I recognised the guy from kind of like, from years back, years before. And he was talking about powerlessness, one's too many, a thousand is enough. I can't negotiate with my illness. It's like the light is either on or it's off. There's no dimmer switch. It's on or it's off. And being an extremist, because I'm like an extremist, I'm either full on, full off. I love you, I hate you. I have no expectation whatsoever, I have every expectation. I'm fully responsible for you, or who are you? you know what I mean? I'm just completely ideal and extreme. I'm complete extremist. So when someone says to me, okay, you're either kind of just cane it, go mad, be a lunatic, or a program of complete abstinence, it was one of them kind of my extremism coming right handy, actually. Well, I can get my head around, there's no wall charts to be filled in, or units to count, or anything like that. You just forget about it, mate. You're powerless. You can't negotiate with this illness. You can't cut deals. You can't bargain. Your head will tell you you can kind of cut deals and bargain and do this and do that. And I'll tell you, I won't use this, this and this drug, all the drugs I don't like. I can do this, this and this drug, all the drugs I think I like. There's no negotiation. That's it. Program of complete abstinence. And this might sound arrogant, it might sound a bit mad, but I walked into that meeting and they told me something I knew, but I didn't know I knew it. Because there's a school of thought. You do your step one before you arrive at your first meeting. You know what I mean? You've done all the experimentation trying to control. And I used to sit in the car with this guy who was my mate from since I was 11, and this other guy. And we used to drive around in this old, it was an old BMW, it was a vintage BMW, and it ended up being crushed for an insurance job. Right, so we weren't that well. You know what I mean? So, but I used to say, I've never stolen my mum's medication, I've never injected in my neck, sold smack on dealing with bomber scrubs and all that. You know, I've never done this, I've never done that. And he used to say to me, can you control your use of mood altering chemicals? And he said, no, I couldn't. And I used to think if you was an addict, it kind of suggested some kind of consistency. You'd done something every day, and that made you an addict, right? And they say, well, no. When you start, you can't stop. You have absolutely no idea when you're going to stop. And when I used to stop was when I couldn't get another drink inside me, when I used to start throwing up vodka. You know, I mean, that's when I would stop. And then I'd get shakes, I'd have fits, I'd piss the bed. It wasn't very elegant. It was horrible. And then I went to a few meetings and I thought, I'm going to have a little experiment. I had my little experiment. I tried to use and control it. I couldn't do it. And then I ended up, I was living in this basement flat, and there wasn't any kind of sheets on the mattress. And one night, one day I woke up, I don't know if it was day or night, whatever it was, and I said, God help me. And something snapped. You know what I mean? It crashed. And I've not used from that day to this. And that was 27th May 1991. It's a long time ago. I went to do a H9 chair the other day, or H9 meeting, and I was talking about, you know, 1991. And this woman said to me, I wasn't born in 1991. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, 20 years is a long time, a very long time. But I hear people in meetings and they say, I'm only 30 days clean. Only. You know, 30 days clean for someone trying to get a white key ring or trying, you know, it's a very, very powerful message. Extremely powerful. You know, someone's six months clean, a very powerful message for someone who's trying to get 60 days, trying to get one of these green key rings. Very, very powerful. 20 years is abstract. It's just too abstract, you know what I mean? But if, you know, we're sitting in meetings here tonight and we're clean, very powerful message, extremely powerful. But I didn't use from that day. But I got the first part of step one. It was chaotic when I used it. I got the second part. But my head is kind of, I've got this illness. It's just kind of like, you know what I mean? It's, if I won the lottery, I'd be very pissed off if it wasn't rollover week. It's my negativity. What do you mean it's only 9 million this week? How am I going to get a yacht with 9 million? What sort of mansion am I going to live in? 9 million? Stick your mind in. Right up. You know what I mean? So anyway, I couldn't get step two. I couldn't understand how anyone was going to help me. Right? So, 20 months clean, I went into a treatment centre, and I thought I was going to be there for 6 weeks, and I thought I was going to get a council flat in Leafy, Regent's Park. They called me in to go into treatment, and they said, look, you know, this is John, it's a special reserve, down by the canal, Weeping Willows, you know, geese, ducks, wherever they get in the canal, and they keep them for the addicts, go for treatment, 6 weeks in and out, you go to Wiltshire. Do your thing and you'll be right as rain, you'll come back, you become super fit, you know what I mean, you know, swimming, and I've got health back, you know what I mean, but I was doing it. And I always say Wiltshire, because I was doing a chair one day, and I said, no, I went on a treatment in Wiltshire. And a guy came up to me afterwards and said, what was you doing in a wheelchair? But if that's the end of about 3 or 4 minute conversation with Wilkes, and you must, you know, trouble with the stairs and all that. And I thought, what is he on about? I managed to be rude, and it's like, and no, what it was, he says, we used to listen to your CD in prison. And he said, well, what was you doing in a wheelchair? And he was only small guy, and I thought, he's just come out of prison, you don't know who he's eating with, you know what I mean? And then he said, oh, I got it. I said, oh, no, I was in Wiltshire. Thanks for that, because I used to wonder, I used to play over and go, what's the game? So I'd love to get into the steps, because the steps for me, right, is where the magic begins, you know what I mean? Because my illness is about kind of negativity, it's about resistance to me doing anything good for myself, you know what I mean? And what the steps do is they break it all down into kind of doable bits. If you want to eat an elephant, chop it into very small bits. Very small bits, you know what I mean? And this is what the steps do, you know what I mean? Because we have this resistance. You know, step two for me is about asking for help, is about believing this stuff works for us. Do I believe this stuff will work for us? Do I think I deserve this? Because I can be quite flash, right? But I don't believe I'm worth 5 minutes of your time. If I ring you up on a Sunday, I think you've got far better things to do than talk to me. That is the essence of my illness. Step three is about accepting the help. A lot of people out there in the street, if you say to them, asking for help and accepting help, to a lot of people, the same thing. To addicts, two different things. You know what I mean? Oh, I'm one of them school, I really, really need your help right now so you can jog on. Do you know what I mean? I really need your help, so away, you know what I mean? It's about agreeing to dip for step three. It's about, I don't know what runs the universe, right, you know what I mean? But sometimes, you know, things go down. I wanted this to happen on that day, it didn't happen, so bad happened. You know what I mean? I can't control the universe. You know, I wanted to control the universe, you know what I mean, when I didn't get out of bed till about 4 in the afternoon. You know what I mean? I would have made a very bad job of running the universe. You know what I mean? I spoke one time, I was doing a step 3 chair with a guy, and I spoke. He said, what's your step 3, right? And I was the sponsor, he was the sponsor, and he said to me, what's your step 3? And I went on for about, no word of a lie, about 40 minutes. He was very jazzy, and I went all over the place, everything. It went all over, right? And I said, what's yours? At the end of it, when I paused for breath, and he says, it's Threnody prayer. This guy's a long time clean, and he kind of got these, and he lived this program, he lived it, you know, and that's what I really admire with people in this, this program. When you live it, you know, you don't chat, you live it, you know what I mean? And that step 4, getting into all that resistance, it stung, it really did sting. I was embarrassed by stuff. My biggest resentment was with myself for allowing things to happen. You know what I mean? I was an ignorant kid. I didn't know. Ignorance is not knowing. Bigotry is I don't want to know. I was an ignorant kid. You know what I mean? I didn't know how to kind of deal with my stuff. I didn't know how to communicate with the world. I didn't know what was going on with me half the time. You know what I mean? Step 5, I sat in front of this guy. I talked a lot of stuff. You know what I mean? I laid a lot of stuff out in that room. I realised I was a very fearful, self-centred kid, you know what I mean, in a man's body. That's why I worked out. The guy said to me, take your foot off your throat. Let yourself get up. You're like a guy sitting in a motor. He's got the accelerator on the floor. The smoke coming out from under the bonnet. He can't work it out. And then he works out. He's got a handbrake on. And that's you. Step 6 was about, am I willing to change? Do I want to kind of get well? Do I want to integrate? Do I want to kind of realise my dreams? Do I want to do stuff? You know what I mean? Recognising my defects. I was very judgmental. I give you a break, but me, I'm very perfectionistic about. I'm very judgmental against myself. I can rip myself apart because I know where the fault line is. I'm snide about myself. Then saying, yeah, I want to do it. Yeah, I want to change. I want to, you know, I'm up for myself. The men's, you know, I went to some people and they said, you know, I knew you was ill before you did. I'm just glad to see you doing what you're doing today, John, you know what I mean? I'm just glad for it. Other people told me, just go away, I'm not interested. I love step 10 because it's just something kind of I don't like resentments building up, you know what I mean? I try and keep this stuff fresh. I try and keep recovery fresh. Years ago, if I had new resentment, it had to go to the end of a very long queue. You know what I mean? And now, if a new resentment appears on the scene, resentment, all right, okay. What are you all about then? You know what I mean? What's this? You know, and what I do, I've got this little thing, right? It comes from where I come from. I continue to take personal inventory, and when I'm safe, I promptly admit. I say to myself, I'm safe. I'm cool with this. This is okay. You know, I'm with people who love me. I'm with people who care for me. My higher power is people who want the best for me. I think the steps are loving, forgiving and kind. They're not a test. They're not here to catch us out. They're here to kind of get us to get to our potential. That's what they're for. They were, for addicts, they were kind of devised by addicts for addicts. We owe AA for them steps. They're genius. They're radical. They're brilliant. You know what I mean? Recovery is progressive. Recovery becomes instinctive for me. If I wake up with a bad head, I go to me. That's what it, you know. I'm in a strange kind of way. Through the steps, through people's help, I've kind of learned to look after myself. You know what I mean? I know what's good for me now. You know, and that ain't drugs. Step 11 for me is about, you know, I mean, doing stuff that nourishes me, because my illness is about deprivation, and step 11 is about nourishment. I nourish myself. And step 12, I love step 12, because I kind of think, you know, the steps aren't linear, they're a circle. So for me to come in here and talk about, you know, I mean, how I got it, the fear that when I arrived, it might help someone in this meeting, you know what I mean? If you're new to these meetings, it's very important, like, that you deserve recovery. You deserve recovery, you know what I mean? It's very, very important. We're at our best in this fellowship when we say welcome. You know what I mean? We're at our best. All that stuff about your new car is making me look bad goes away when we're working with newcomers. You know what I mean? That's kind of... I'm extremely cynical. When I first came in, I was extremely cynical. But when I'm cynical, it's because I'm scared. You know what I mean? And all the stuff that people are telling me stuff, I know I better embrace. But I'm scared to embrace. And I was worried about doing this chair, you know what I mean? In a funny kind of way, you know what I mean? Like I say, you know what I mean? I really feel this, I feel really, really passionate. If you are a newcomer, this stuff works. It won't work at the, you know, I was in Ireland one time and I was talking about the first part of step two, and I wondered what he meant, and he said, we came and we got our kind of hearts on a chair and we listened to this stuff, because this stuff is surreal to start with, but then it starts making a lot of sense. And the other thing the guy says, and I'll finish with this, that he went to a detox, and the guy was saying to him, how long have I got to go to their meetings? And he said to the guy, you've got to go until you want to go. Yeah, sweet. And I want to go to meetings now. And thanks very much for listening. Thank you very much.